Oh, wait.
Warning. The following presentation is for mature audiences only.
Rewind.
It is not intended for children, oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord, Carol the Cat,
that's me,
the Giddy Geeker,
that's her,
and Tiffany the Technician.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball whipping wobbly in time twice.
Stop.
And now, damn right they shot first, the hosts of Guardians of the Geekery.
Dun, dun. Episode 52!
Oh my gosh!
Wow! Misty Massey, thank you for being with us. Author extraordinaire, before we can let you really talk about anything, stuff you really want to,
we're really going to go right into the rapid-fire response round. I'm going to ask you a series of questions off the top of my head. You're going to answer with a simple word or phrase. If you don't answer soon enough, we will answer for you. And a lot of times those answers involve the word stripper pole. So
we don't know why.
Capes or no capes?
Oh, capes.
Which is your favorite doctor?
Eccleston.
Okay, if you could take the TARDIS anywhere, where would you take it?
Gallifrey. I want to see those silvery trees.
Saturday Night Live, Kids in the Hall,
Monty Python,
In Living Color.
Met. Monty Python?
All right. No, everybody else was saying Kids in the Hall, just for the record.
Never even seen it.
What book did you just finish reading?
I am almost finished reading City of Stairs by Robert Jackson Bennett.
What was the last movie you saw?
Oh, golly. Probably 2010. I watched it the other day at home.
What's your secret guilty pleasure?
Velveeta. It's bad. It's fake. It's plastic. I shouldn't eat it, but it's so tasty. It's not food. It's plastic.
Cheese. Processed cheese-like substance.
There you go.
No, I'm not doing the eat. We're doing air quotes there.
Air quotes.
It's cheese product. If you were trapped on an island with a solar-powered, battery-charged tablet, what book would you preload to read over and over again?
The Anubis Gates by Tim Powers.
What movie?
Indiana Jones, the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh, I thought you said the Crystal Skull.
No,
what? Sorry,
Crystal Skull? I don't know what that is.
It's fan fiction.
There was no Roadhouse 2. And musical album.
Oh, Dark Side of the Moon.
And video game you could play on a tablet.
I don't know. I don't play video games.
Solitaire?
Yeah, solitaire would work. Yeah, okay. I could play solitaire.
Stripper pole solitaire.
Congratulations. You have survived the rapid fire response. Not only that, but you're part of Team Estroman.
Yes.
We won last night in the Hollywood game thing. Yeah, so we're sitting here at Atomicon, and last night we had the sci-fi Atomicon
game night,
similar to the Hollywood game night that you've seen on TV with Sylvester, Jane Lynch. And Misty, you were on our team.
I was.
You and I and Carol, and then
you kicked somebody off your team so I could be on your team.
Yes,
we did.
I kicked Retardus, Randy Richards, on our team. Yes, no, well, because I knew that, like, I was doing the air quotes eyes to eyes finger motion. Like, you will know what I'm talking about because nobody else will, so.
And we kicked butt.
We did kick butt.
Yes.
I mean, and not for nothing, and I would never call Tally out like this on a national, you know, syndicated podcast, but I totally saw him looking at Todd's card for Gamora. He would have never gotten it otherwise.
Oh, I know. And poor old Todd, he didn't have his glasses on, so he was doing the best he could.
He did an awesome effort, but it was so funny because it was like, Tally's like, Gromora. I'm like, you totally just saw that because Todd had the card.
And I still call cheating for using props.
Yes. For gravity?
Yes. We did charades, and you weren't supposed to use any props or words. And one of the guys was making sounds. The other one was trying to get gravity, so he dropped some tissues so you could get them.
That's a prop, yeah.
That's a prop.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. And he had gravity. Somebody else had, I don't know.
It was like...
Oh, they had totally easy. Yeah, Men in Black.
Planet of the Apes, Men in Black. I had The Day the Earth Stood Still. That is not easy to charade.
She got it?
And I had 2001 Space Odyssey, which meant I had to be a big ape.
Yeah. But she was drawing the obelisk, and it took us a second. We just saw a door at first.
Yeah, because I couldn't reach up high, because I'm little.
Well, and it was like, I was doing the arm shapes over your head, like the big letter O for the Earth, and I couldn't. But eventually you figured out Earth.
Yeah, you did great.
And then it was okay. But yeah, you had Night of the Living Dead, right?
No, I had Harry Potter, so I had the easy
one. Yeah, that one was the easy one.
That's like, I'll go first.
Felix's wasn't too bad. I forget what his was, but it wasn't too bad.
Because we had one guy on our team, Felix.
Yeah, Felix, which he had
that's the awesome. Estro men.
Yes, but we did great. But tell us... About you. Yes. Who are you? What the heck are you doing here? Tell us what you're working on.
I am an author. I am the author of Mad Kestrel and Kestrel's Voyages, which are stories about magic and adventure on the high seas. And I'm also a brand new editor. And this is the first time I've ever done that, so this has been very exciting and a little bit crazy-making along the way. But I'm the editor of The Weird Wild West, which is a collection of short stories all set in the Wild West that never was. There's magic, there's zombies, there's science fiction, there's aliens, there's all kinds of things in our book, and we're really, really excited about it coming out. We have some fabulous authors in there. John Hartness is one of our authors, Faith Hunter, Jonathan Mayberry, if you know Rotten Ruin series, he's one of our authors. We're very excited about that. James Tuck. We have some fabulous people in our book. I have a story in it, too, that doesn't have any pirates in it. But
what?
I know, but we do have a pirate story in the Weird Wild West. And it's the opening story of the book, and you'll just have to wait. It's wonderful. It's by one of the authors that submitted over the slush. And so we're very excited about hers. Hers was the first story that we accepted, actually. And so we're thrilled to death about that one. But yeah, Pirates and Weird West, it goes together. Wow. So, and that one that's coming out the first week of December.
You did a Kickstarter for that, didn't you?
We did do a Kickstarter for that and did very well. We did more than we were asking for. We didn't do quite enough to do two books, but we did well over what we were asking for, so we were just thrilled to death. We were able to add two extra stories to the book and some more illustrations to the book, and so we were very pleased. The Kickstarter went really well.
That's great. Awesome. That's a great universe to play in, right?
Yeah. It is.
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, and that's one of those things I've liked since I was a kid. I was of the Wild Wild West generation.
Uh-huh.
You know, although I was going to marry Artemis Gordon.
Oh my God!
I would have gotten him first.
Well,
no.
I would have gotten him
first. Can all just share. You know, that's allowed nowadays.
I
watch a TV show with that going on, yeah.
I was never Jim, you know, Jim West was never my guy. It was always Artemis Gordon.
Well, you know, Jim West was pretty, and he wore those pants very well. But Artemis Gordon, I'm sorry, smart is sexy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what an awesome actor he was.
Plus, I could do cosplay in the bedroom, like, you know, for whatever. Yeah.
And the voices he could come up with. I'm a sucker for a deep voice. If you can James Earl Jones me, you can, well... Now I'm engaged, but back in my single days, if you could James Earl Jones me, you could get me.
Matt's going, making notes.
Oh, he knows.
We've got our own routine.
Yeah, if he is into Star Wars, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, no, definitely.
I am your daddy.
That went to a weird place.
Sorry.
Okay.
Unicorns. Pooping unicorns. So. We just watched the pooping unicorn video while we were waiting for the next.
Okay.
I was like half awake, and I first saw like a part of that, and I was like, and then I woke up the next morning. I'm like, did I dream that I was looking at Facebook and there was a unicorn talking to me while it was taking a rainbow poop? I was like, oh wow.
Just, and the guy who's doing the narrator, he's just that much of a He's a cross between Wesley from The Princess Bride and the Dread Pirate Roberts. Enough of that, and a little bit of Chris Sarandon, and then a whole bunch of Robin Hood men in tights. I'm just saying. Yeah. It's just that kind of snarky, cheeky stuff going on. So, you know, not as bold faceless like a Monty Python kind of thing. It's just that little finesse of it. So it's like, we know what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Wink, wink.
Nudge.
Yes.
So what's your next project after Weird Wild West?
My next project, I am working on finishing. I actually have a Western fantasy novel in process, and I'm trying to get that finished so that I can send that out and see if I can sell it. And I tell people it's fairies and romance and adventure and electricity in all the wrong places.
Anything else you can tell us about that? You can't just drop that on the table.
I have to tell you, episode 51 was Mocha Memoirs, and we were talking about
strawberry-flavored condoms.
Deep canyons.
Open cavernous.
Cavernous
love caves.
Gaping love caves. So, electricity in the wrong places at this time of the morning just makes us go to the bathroom.
Well, and, my main character can't touch anybody because he might zap them. And so he has to have various ways to not zap the people that he cares about. And sometimes those ways just get missed and forgotten about. So that's why electricity in the wrong places. Okay. Because they can be, in the really wrong places. But I don't know, though, that I've included any cavernous love caves in my story. But I'll definitely stick that aside for
the next story.
Yeah, then for the next novel.
So. Well, an electric tentacle porn. I hear that's very popular these days.
I do. I just have to figure out.
No. Carol. There's a little blonde in your red hair this morning.
There's a little gray in my red hair this morning.
So I guess I would need desert octopi.
Yeah. Wow. Don't get sand in those places.
No. But I'm working on that. I've also finished writing the sequel to Mad Kestrel, which is tentatively called Kestrel's Dance. And I'm looking at trying to sell it to a publisher very soon. So anybody that wants to get fussy with me, stop getting fussy with me. I'm trying. But that's in play. And we're talking about some other projects that I cannot reveal at this time. So, but there are a lot of things going on.
Are you going to do any more editing? Or?
Well, that's might be one of the projects that I can't reveal at this time. So.
Did you enjoy the experience of editing? Or?
Overall, I did. I did. Like any project that you do, there were times when I wanted to pull my hair out and then, scream, witness, and go after certain people with, spray chrome on my face and go nuts. But for the most part.
Carol is now spitting up Diet Coke. Precariously close to the end.
A lovely day. But
well, I found it an interesting process. I used to write indie comic books, and then a friend of mine who was doing that type of thing was like, would you mind editing this? He goes, I can't do it. I said, yeah. I just automatically, he was a good friend, I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that. And then he said, but here's the only thing, I can't get the artist to do any revisions, so whatever artwork I give you, that's it. And I was like, okay. And I had to rearrange panels and pages, and this is before it was all digital, and I was like, am I allowed to rearrange this all, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know what script you gave him, but this is kind of where we're where we're at. And it was such a challenge because it was almost like laying out on a magazine at that point, and I was like ripping up panels and put it, and I was like, I hate to do this to his artwork, but it's like there's no other solution with this, because I
no, I but it's get
like,
that
you have to be an editor at the beginning of the process too. It was just like, here's everything we have, just make sense of it. And I was like, it was very difficult, and it was like 22 pages, but it took forever. And
that was kind of what happened to me.
Okay,
I did this project with Emily Leverett and Margaret McGraw. And so the three of us worked together. We split up the stories and edited them. And we worked with the authors, who were absolutely wonderful people, every single one of them. When we suggested changes, they came back with either making the changes or making good arguments why something shouldn't change. And so, you know, we had a wonderful relationship with our authors. But at the end, when it was time to put the whole manuscript together, I said, I can do this. Guess what? I can't do this. And so I'm sitting there in front of a computer in tears because the computer is winning and I can't make it work. I can't make the formatting work. I can't do anything. And Margaret, God bless her, emails me and she goes, oh, I've already put that together. You don't have to do that. And I went, you just became my true love and I will, I owe you everything forever.
Sorry,
Todd. So, Todd knows. He knows already. So that was one of those moments that I was ready to go murder somebody, just anybody I could find on the street, because I was so frustrated. So Margaret saved someone's life. So yay.
Ooh, yay, Margaret. Yes. Saved your life.
They did.
Promised there would not be singing.
I know.
No,
I don't know.
She never makes that promise.
That was
come
in
on,
your dreams, and now you're awake, and the nightmare truly begins.
Yeah. I'm my own horror story.
So, how long have you been writing?
How old am I?
I'm not going to answer that question on the air.
I will. I'm 53. I am absolutely cool with
you
everybody
look
knowing.
Fantastic.
Thank you. 50s are awesome.
Oh, I'm 45. I was thinking of the girl from Molly
Shannon.
But 53, you don't look it. That's the that's where the success is.
Thank
you. If you can say your age and everybody's like, you have energy in life, so.
I'm doing my best to continue being young at heart so it shows on the outside. But yeah, I'm cool with everybody knowing I'm 53, so I am old and y'all can't touch me. but to answer your actual question, I remember there was a question. I've been writing all my life, but I started actually considering it a career option when I was 30, because that's when I had my son, and I was home for several weeks, getting over being pregnant and giving birth and getting ready to go back to work. And in order to keep my sanity, because I was home basically with a newborn all day and had nobody to talk to, I started writing just to entertain myself. And I was writing short stories at the time, and my husband said, you know, you really shouldn't just write them and let them sit there. You should do something with them. So I started submitting to magazines and things that I could find, and I started getting accepted. And at that point, I went, you know, this might be something I could actually do. And so I have been writing for 23 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But didn't really get a whole lot of success. I sold a few stories to small magazines until... But then I joined a writing group that had among its population Faith Hunter, who you guys know from Con Carolinas. Yeah. And Faith took one look at my story and said, why are you not writing a novel? And basically took my arm up behind my back and said, write a novel or I'll keep doing this. And so I wrote a novel, and she was right. And it went through lots and lots of revision through the group. But it finally came out as Mad Kestrel a few years back. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is a very good book, incidentally. I have read it.
Thank you.
I'll work on that next. I just finished I say next, but there's about three other books I have to read first. So.
I understand how that works.
I just finished John Hartnett's Black Knight Chronicles, the first five books. And he better be writing a sixth, or I will do the hand behind the back thing, because that's not right the way he left it. I need
just
more.
Just wait till he gets another tattoo and threaten to smack it.
Oh.
Good. I did that to him once by accident, and so, but it really takes him down, so...
Good info.
Yes, John, I just gave away your secret weakness. Ha ha!
That's okay. We always we pick on him quite frequently on the air, just so he has to listen to our podcast. So.
Yeah.
But
we love John.
Yeah, no, John is awesome. But yeah, no, that's really great. And I do think there's just a real power to this Charlotte's writers group. And the area, I know I can't say it, but you understand what I'm trying to say. There are several strong writers groups in the area, and I really feel that there's a huge value based on the writers we've had on the podcast to that kind of a thing. And I don't mean to, you know, bandy about names, but it reminds me a lot of growing up in New England. We'd always hear about the Concord group of writers, you know, and there were so many of them that were all together. And similar to like Mary Shelley, you know, with Frankenstein, I mean, that was a group of writers that hung out together and that's all right. The stories that resulted from that weekend. So, you know, there's definitely a high value in that. If you're going to do a singular job or singular occupation like writing, you do need to surround yourself with people who are as invested in you and have a desire to see you succeed. So.
Yeah, I have many times said that a good writer's group that really works is worth its weight in gold. But a bad writer's group is really, really a bad thing. And if you get involved with a bad writer's group, the best thing to do is cut your losses and run.
And how do you know the difference?
When you're in a group that is not interested in doing anything but saying, that was really good. You know, giving no constructive criticism at all, just building each other, you know, patting on the back kind of thing. That's not a good writer's group. A writer's group that is full of people who will not take constructive criticism, you know, if you say, I really don't think you should have written this character as a straight cis male, you should maybe write it as maybe as a gay man, try taking it from that direction, and the writer immediately says, you're stupid and you don't know what you're talking about. That's a group to walk away from.
Yeah.
These things happen. I met somebody once that felt that commas were for decoration and should be used liberally and just crazy, go nuts, all over the place. And I'm still not sure whether that person was kidding or not. But
this person was William Shatner, was it?
Or like Forbes?
It was not. But it could have been.
You heard about the Lark Voorhees. Autobiography,
no,
right? The girl from Saved by the Bell that played Lisa Turtle. She wrote an autobiography, and literally every word has a comma after it.
Oh my
including
God.
Including the title.
Oh my God.
There's like four commas in the title.
Oh,
was that deliberate? I mean, just.
Yeah, like she's certified up straight crazy. And somebody published this book. Or allowed her to publish it.
And see, that I blame the editor. Somebody's editor didn't do their job because, really, there's no reason for
and there's
that.
No coming back from that once somebody knows that about you. It's like, no, there was a time in your life where you thought that was okay.
Right.
And you surrounded yourself with people that said it was.
Right, right, exactly. So. Yeah. It's not okay. Learn the rules of commas, please. I beg you. Everybody.
So what advice do you have for people who are just starting out writing and are hoping to at least sell something?
You're so destructive.
My OCD is kicking in here because this is hanging off the edge on the left. I'm looking at my badge. Oh. I have a flag on my badge. And the left-hand side is hanging off the edge a little bit, and the right-hand side has plastic, and I'm going to move
it. I would have to move it, too.
Okay. The OCD is kicking in, and it's just driving me nuts.
And she's going to fix that while you give us tips.
Okay, advice for the writer's lovelorn. The best thing I can say is finish the book, because so many people will come to these events and say, "So I've got 20 pages written," and that's really nice. But 20 pages of a novel is going to get you nowhere unless you are somebody that already has a relationship with a publishing house. And you're turning that in as a proposal or something. Most people who are writing with the eye toward getting published and don't have a relationship already set up with a publisher, they gotta finish that book first. The publisher wants to see the whole thing. Yeah. So sit down, finish it. The other thing I'm gonna say is not necessarily every day, because I try, but I don't write every day. I probably won't write today because I'm busy doing this, you know, being at Atomicon and being on. But try to write on a fairly regular basis, because it is so easy to lose your momentum. And if you lose that momentum of your story, it can be impossible to get it back. And you don't want to lose that. You want to be creative and brilliant and wonderful and put it on the page. So, yeah, put it on the page.
Do you know where your story is going to end when you start it?
Yes.
Okay.
I know my beginning and my ending. It's just the middle bit that's all wibbly wobbly timey wimey. So yeah.
I know that's my challenge, is that I crafted out a novel. And I sit there and I go, Joey, you got to get back to it. And you've kind of gotten to that point where it's a little too far. I feel like, you know, it was a NaNoWriMo project that went well, and then all of a sudden it's just there. But it's like, I know what this part of the book is doing, and I know what this part of the book is doing. And somewhere in the middle they have to meet. But then it occurs to me that maybe it should be this be a book. This middle part that I don't know yet should be a book. And this end part should be a book. So And that's, like, more daunting. So I'm like, just do a short story, damn it. Get it done. So
you know, and that's good. You know, write the short story. Because a lot of times you'll write a short story and then go, you know, this needs to be longer. And suddenly you find your way. So if that's what gets you over that hump, go for it. Nothing. I do a blog called Magical Words, which is at magicalwords.net. And I share it with Faith Hunter and David Coe. We're getting ready to change it up a little for next year, so there will be a lot more people on. John Hartness is going to be one of our regulars. We do writing tips and advice for people. And one of the things we try to tell everybody over and over is, we're giving you advice, but there's no one right way. The right way is the way that works for you. So just because we say, here's how to do it, doesn't mean that that's the only way you can do it. And if that's what gets you over that hump, girl, go for it.
Yeah. What gets me over my hump is my own self getting in my way.
So that's I know that feeling. So do you feel that writers need agents, or is that like the catch-22? Can you get an agent without being published, or do you have to be published to get an agent?
You can get an agent without being published. There are lots of agents. Now, the ones that are really, really famous that you've heard about that are repping Stephen King and James Patterson and stuff, those guys are busy, and so they're not looking for a whole lot of new people. But they generally have people under them, other agents under them, who are looking for new authors. So agents are looking for new people all the time. You don't have to have an agent to get published. There are publishers who take manuscripts over the transom, as they say. And I think James Tuck was published 2 or 3 books in before he got an agent, and he did very well. Trying to think of who else. John Hartness was publishing and very successful without a publisher. He was doing it all on his own before the publisher came to him and said, hey, we want to publish your books. And I don't think he has an agent to this day. And he's just fine with that. I published Mad Kestrel through an agent that I got before I had done anything more than a few short stories. I met her at a writing conference, and we sat down and talked about my story. And she asked me to submit 3 chapters, and I sent them to her. And a few weeks later, she offered representation. Now, we're not together anymore for a lot of different reasons, but it was an amicable split, and I'm looking for somebody new. But at the same time, I'm not committed to, I must have an agent or I can't move forward at this point. I'm still looking at other options. So you can get an agent. You don't have to have one, but they do help because they understand how to negotiate contracts. They understand what the contract's even saying. They know what to look for in a contract with a publisher, and they know how to hook you up with various promotional opportunities. So they can be really, really helpful. But you don't have to have one, no. So, there was a thought I had, but it's gone. So it went flitting away.
It's gone now. It's so do you like doing the con circuit as far as it, as I know? I mean, we're all con junkies here. We do them a lot. And we see a lot of the same people at a lot of the different cons. Do you find it's helpful for new writers to get into, like, the con circuit and just get their work out there?
I do. I think it's good to get to know who else is in your industry. Because if you don't know what other people are doing, then you don't know if you're copying something that's already been done. Mm-hmm. And that... it's so frustrating to write a story and spend your time on it and send it in and have a publisher go, yeah, we have 3 stories just like that. where if you had been, you know, reading what other people do and then meeting other people and hearing what their projects are, you might have a chance to revise yours in a way that will take it in a new direction that a publisher hasn't seen yet. Also, cons, I find, are fabulous opportunities to get into anthologies and other sorts of projects that you might not have known about, because being writers, we're very home alone all the time. You know, writing is a person and a computer, or a person and a notebook. And so it's, you got to get out of the house at some point. And so I was in, the very first anthology I was in came about because I went to a room party, and one of the people at the party happened to be an editor who was doing an anthology about pirates and magic. And David Coe was also at that at that party, and he turned from her to me and said, "Misty, get over here." And so I was able to get in on this project because, and this was a person, we're friends now, but back then I'd never met her. She lived in New England, and I lived in South Carolina, so there was no chance that we would have just run into each other without being at the con together. So I do think cons are great places for people to meet up and get together and promote themselves. So
that's awesome.
And it's also just fun.
I mean, there's a reason why we're con junkies, because it's fun coming down here.
How many cons do you find you do you a year?
Lately, it's been three or four. Last few years, it's been three or four a year. I've done Atomicon now 3 times. I've done Illogicon 3 times. I do Con Carolinas every year because that's my home con and I love it. And now I'm employed, and so
she's my writer's track director, so she can't go away.
I work for Carol now.
Stuck.
Don't beat me, Carol. Don't beat me. I'm doing my job.
No. I want you to continue, please.
But so I go to Con Carolinas every year because that's my home con and I love it dearly. I'd go to Congregate in the summer, and they're wonderful to work with, too. I've been to Dragon Con a few times, but it's really big and scary, and it just does, it's too big for me to get the same result from it that I get from the smaller cons. At these smaller cons, I can interact with people and have an actual conversation in the hallway, where at Dragon Con, if I'm lucky to have a conversation with somebody, it's probably going to be outside on the sidewalk, because inside you just can't stop and speak for 2 minutes. And so while Dragon Con is fabulous and people love it, and I had a great time when I went, it's not something I generally
do. Dragon Con to be my non-working con. It's the one where it's like, we might wear 20 buttons on our thing and hand them out to people as we see them, but we're not trying to set up a booth or sell at that. That's kind of our vacation con. Yeah. Because it would be too hard. I think if you were established enough, and you know, as a podcast or anything else, we're not at that point.
Then that would be one thing, because then people would be coming to see you and find you. But to try to compete against 90 or 100 other people is just
it's overwhelming. Too hard.
Yeah.
On a separate note, we do have something else in common. We both belly dance, and I hope sometime soon we can actually get on stage.
I heard this total rumor you were going to go at the 2016 Geek Gala, but it didn't happen. So
2015.
So I'm just going to put it out there that 2016 is the year of the belly dance, Carol LeGat.
Yes.
Well, that's been bounced around occasionally.
Yeah. Well, stop bouncing and start bellying. That's all I'm saying.
Start shimmying.
Yes. Well, okay. That doesn't start with a B.
Actually, bouncing is, there's a move bouncing called the Nagua Bounce, which is one of my favorites. So maybe there'll be a bounce in the belly dance. But but yeah, I've been belly dancing for 10 years. So I did the math the other day. I went, gee whiz, I've been doing this long. So, and it's a lot of fun. And right now I'm not so much taking lessons as keeping my skills up. With Camila at Camila Belly Dance. I think it's CamilaBellyDance.com, but she's definitely Camila Belly Dance. She does lessons in Rock Hill, and so I go down to her studio once a week and take lessons with her, and we're having a wonderful time. We're trying to get a certain Miss Gray Cat to come and take lessons with us. So
I'm trying to get to a point where I can actually do that. So now that I'm in that area.
I just happen to know that we happen to change around the podcast recording date just so you can do that.
Specifically for that.
Did you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so. Yeah, like back in February, but nobody's counting or anything like that.
It wasn't even February. It was later than that.
Oh, so but you do acknowledge that we did move it around for you. That was my point.
Okay.
That
we
it was late February.
And see, now I know. And I am a
put
mistress.
Put the pressure on.
I am a mistress of the guilt as a weapon. Because my mama raised me right. So okay. I will use it against you.
And she's, and now Carol is frantically reaching for the end credits.
Yes. But yes, we have talked about doing a duo at Geek Gala 2016.
Well, I will log it into the schedule now.
Thank you.
And yes, announce you on the page. Oh my God. Oh, wait a second. I have to ride home with her, and then I'll announce it on the page.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
I'm going to have you do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Misty, so much for coming on there.
Yes,
and
thank you.
Tell
thank
your
you
listeners again
me.
When where they can find you on the internets.
Well, I'm pretty easy to find. I'm at mistymassey.com. That is my website. Or you can find me on Facebook. I'm Misty Massey. Or
and
I'm
Misty's
on Twitter.
Misty's M-I-S-T-Y. Uh-huh. And Massey's M-A-S-S-E-Y.
That's correct. And I'm also Misty Massey on Twitter. Although I don't hang out on Twitter a lot. I'm still getting used to how that works.
Yeah, but I kind of tweet through osmosis. So whatever I put on Facebook automatically tweets for me. So
I need to figure out how to do that. But
well, thank you so much. And here we go.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Rock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstoffer. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.